hearing. And it says possible work session, but I think that may not materialize. We'll see. On the Construction Contractors Board, it's House Bill 5013. And we have Mr. Smith, the administrator there, and Deborah Menti from the LFO. And Deborah, do you have any comments this morning for weekend? Okay. Mr. Smith.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, we left off yesterday with additional discussion regarding the CCB's investigators that work on unlicensed issues, and we were talking about a program package. There was a question by Senator Johnson which allowed us to expand a little bit more on that situation. The regional investigators, what we called regional investigators, that program sunsetted about a year ago. Since that period of time, we have backfilled using limited duration folks, and that is the genesis of this package number 107 that's before you. I have made some additional handouts on that, if you care to discuss that a little bit further.
Please. We may hold this discussion, though, for a half hour or so into our meeting. Senator Johnson will be a little late this morning, and she might want to hear that discussion. So proceed on from where you were, and we'll pick it up a little bit later. Then the senator gets through her other pending business.
Chair Jensen and Representative Byers, I'm hearing you ask what page on the packet. That package is contained on page number 62.
Thank you.
62?
66.
There must be a different
book. The Enforcement Field Investigation Unit, package number 107. I'm sorry, I misread the page. It actually is page number 53 of 62. My 62 is kind of the handout that we have provided to you, I hope, is clearer, and it shows precisely what we're hoping to do with this package. It is a package which would be 10 positions, but 7.5 FTE, 5 full-time, 5 part-time individuals. We would use these folks to do almost solely job site investigations for unlicensed activity, would probably also get into workers' comp violations. We would use financing from the old regional investigator programs, the $500,000 and the $165,000 that you see in the box, and then we would use existing revenue. We would not require a fee increase, but would require additional spending limitation of $373,890. The outputs for that program would be on the second page. Primarily, it's to increase the percentage of stakeholders who are satisfied with the level of enforcement activity. We do receive significant complaints from contractors regarding unlicensed works on job sites. Consumers don't complain about that problem. They have other complaints. But our licensees, of course, are very concerned with competing against unlicensed contractors. With these resources, we would perform 1,000 job sites per month to determine whether or not people on those sites were properly licensed. We would contact and maintain relationships with the local building officials, which can be very helpful. And we would perform at least 2 targeted interagency sweeps. What that means is we would work collectively with the Workers' Comp, Department of Revenue, and other associated agencies to try to get a better bang for the buck. We'd also perform 1 interagency that should read interagency sweep. That's just inside the agency. We would provide trade licensing checks for building code. Landscape contractors we would also check as a courtesy. And we'd also provide increased referrals to the Department of Consumer and Business Services Workers' Compensation Division. You may know that there is a new revised state independent contractor law that was Senate Bill 323 last session. We've been working with our partners regarding this law. That the terms of that law, the statutory terms, as well as rules that have been adopted by the agencies involved, need to be disseminated to the public, both workers and businesses. We would work collectively with those partnered agencies to get that word out. This would increase construction industry level of satisfaction with regard to the agency's mission to facilitate a level playing field. And you can see that we have two targeted outcome-type measures. The first one is a key performance measure, and that is the recidivism rate. I believe that these resources could help us reduce that recidivism rate at the indicated margin, 1% in 2008 and 2% in 2009. In addition, we do...
Senator Whitson.
Thank you, Chief Minister. Chuck, what? How would this proposed policy option package, how would this change what you are currently doing, and why would you think it would work better than what you're doing now?
Good question. Senator Jensen and Senator Whitson, in the past, we've had these regional investigators on contract. Again, we have not had those folks for about a year. Currently, we have limited duration people doing precisely what this package would do for the 07-09 biennium. So the answer to your question is this package would continue what the agency is doing currently today. It's better than what we did a year ago because we could have the we could be able to direct and control those employees like we could not do with the independent contractors. Training issues are important. We cannot train independent contractors regarding administrative law, workers' comp law, even licensing law. When you train an independent contractor, if you are the master or the primary contractor, you can cross the line into an employment arena. But we need the ability to direct and control these people. Limited duration would achieve that. That's the advantage over the contracting out.
Could you expand how you cross the line into labor law? I mean, in training a contract investigator, you cross the line?
The Senator Jensen and Senator Whitson, it's one of the most complicated areas of the law that I've ever studied, and I'm not a lawyer. I can tell you that I've become more familiar with the employment law and independent contractor law in the last 2 years because of this program and because of the change in the statutory requirements than I have for the previous 20. There are two main provisions of the independent contractor law. The first one is that an independent contractor must have a separate independent business. That usually is manifested by some kind of a storefront or at least other customers. The other is that the master relationship, the primary contractor, cannot direct and control the meaner and manner in the way the services are provided. There is tremendous amount of case law over the last 100 years that helped define that. And I can tell you that one of the things that contributes to crossing that line is when that master directly trains the subcontractors. There are other things. Providing the tools, providing the training. There's a variety of things that cross that line. And in working with the AG's office, we determined that it is not possible, given the new definition of independent contractor, to contract out this service.
That's amazing.
Senator Jensen, Senator Whitson, it is truly an amazing law.
I hear the tapping of the pencil, which typically indicates to me that you're confused a little or perplexed by this, maybe.
Well, Mr. Chair, it would seem that that the law would prevent the application of common sense here. That the law would prevent the state agency from providing the training that would make the independent contractor a useful employee. Useful, he's not actually not an employee, but a useful addition to the agency, and perhaps the agency should be looking at providing materials that the independent contractor could peruse in order to make themselves useful, or the agency perhaps could be doing a better selection of the independent contractor that they're already trained in that law previous to hiring them, would you think?
Yeah. And Senator, on a personal basis, we touched on this particular law when the Revenue Department was here, because mm-hmm. they have some interesting interpretations of this law, and I'm not saying their interpretations are wrong. They better legal minds, I'm sure, than I, who lays no claim to a legal, you know, background. But I find it interesting that independent contractors that the federal government will accept as far as tax purposes, that our neighbor to the north and our neighbor to the east will accept for tax purposes as independent contractors. Our law defines them, or defines that activity in such a way that those that would be acceptable to the IRS are not acceptable to the Oregon Department of Revenue. I've wanted to look at that particular law, but it only came to my attention during this session, and that seemed to be I seem to have enough on my plate without getting into that can of worms. But I share here and the department's concern and consternation over this particular statute without making a judgment as to whether or not independent contractors would be better or worse than state employees.
Wouldn't it seem, Mr. Chair, that the that before one were to hire an independent contractor to do a particular job, that they would make sure that the independent contractor had their prerequisite abilities to do that job?
Senator, in another world, at another time, I hired a lot of independent contractors, and I certainly did, and then I didn't hire those that didn't have whatever the prerequisites were to do that job, and I common sense would tell me that any business would do that. So,
follow-up question.
Sure.
Sir, does the board have a set of requirements that the independent contractors would have to meet, a set of skills that they would have to possess prior to being hired?
Mr. Chair and Senator Whitsitt, the past contracts did require that the vendor must be a professional investigator with a license from the Oregon Board of Investigators, have experience in the licensing law and in construction arena. The problems, however, with that raised were when the laws changed, statutes changed regarding licensing. Workers' comp law changed, even this independent contractor changed. It's difficult to find an individual in the private market that has all the skills necessary to do this kind of investigation work. Even if they are a professional investigator, and we struggled with that. We believe that we were, and we still believe, that we are operating properly with these vendors. But as time progressed, we were cautioned by our counsel as to what we could, how we could interact with them, how, whether or not we could train them, what tools we could provide them in terms of forms, other issues, even meetings with them could be interpreted to be training and could cross the line into an employment relation. We believe we didn't do that. But after we looked at these contracts and looked at the agency's needs and talked extensively with the AG's office, and please believe me when I tell you, bent over backwards to try to find a way that we could contract out this service, it was we were advised that it's just not practical or possible.
Senator Bates.
Go ahead.
You finished?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. A couple comments. I've been summoned by Senator Morissette to his office. I have to go up there for a minute. I'll come right back down. I had the pleasure of working with this board last year. I remember I made a call and had an issue, and the board was extremely helpful, very polite, quick answer the phone. But we ran into some problems after that phone call that I'd like to address here real quickly, if I could. First off, people who come to you, and most of the people come to you, or at least half the people come to you, are homeowners. This is the biggest investment these people make in their entire lives. It is the biggest single investment they'll make. And you're receiving anywhere from 500 to 600 complaints a day by phone. That's a lot of complaints. It indicates to me there's a problem out there. Whether people like to admit it or not, there's a problem out there. One of your key performance measures is education of the public about your existence and what you're doing. What I'm seeing here is you got 35 to 40% of the public even aware that you exist, and your goal is 60%. That's ridiculous. Your goal should be 95%. And why you have a target of 60% is I just don't understand. That target needs to be changed dramatically. You've got a long way to go before people know about this. If you have the power to do your job, you can keep a lot of people out of court, both for builders and homeowners. And we can protect the public. If you need more firepower to do that, I'm glad to vote for you. But that's what you're telling me is here, which I think you are, and I'm with you. But your goal should be not 60%. That's terrible. That's a terrible target. Talk about protecting the public and the biggest investment in their lives. They're going to build a house one time in their life. They're going to buy a new home probably one time in their life. There's great builders out there that can count on doing a great job, and you and I both know there's others. Okay? Enough said. I would ask you to change that target. And you change that target up to 95%. I don't expect you to hit tomorrow. You make it in 5 or 6 years. I'm glad to build this budget out for you. Secondly, I never got into dispute resolutions because you ran into another problem before that. It's time of discovery. The way the statutes read right now, you can get into a discussion with your builder. He can dribble you along for a year. And then when you go to the board to get some resolution of it, you find out your time of discoveries ran out, because if I remember right, it was 1 year. And it doesn't start ticking from the time you start having a dispute with your builders when you call up right away. So if 40% of the population at best knows about you, but the builders don't know about you, and you want to dribble somebody along and not get the CCB involved in a dispute, that's an easy way to do it. So the first question is, what are we doing to resolve that issue? Secondly, where are you going to be with your target in the future? And the third thing is an obvious one, that's your non-licensed people coming back in and repeating the crime. And that's, you need help on that, and we'll give it to you as far as I'm concerned. So the two questions are, one, what about time of discovery? And two, what about your target for getting the public informed? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator.
Mr. Chair and Senator Bates, regarding the what amounts to a statute of limitations for filing a complaint with CCB. It's been 1 year for 25 years. That's arbitrary. It could be 2 years. It could be 5 years. The argument for making it too long down the road is that you run into maintenance issues. But that is a pretty weak argument with regard to extending it to 2 years. The board has considered it a two-year. No reason we can't do that. We do have a bill in this session that would be, in essence, there would be a penalty if a contractor failed to provide a consumer with a notice that they're required to currently by law, consumer protection notice, that tells the consumer about the CCB. So if a contractor failed to give that notice, they'd be required to, the consumer would have 2 years instead of one. That would be a hefty incentive to provide that notice. And if the notice was provided, that target goes up. The amount of people that know about us goes up. I can tell you that that bill ran into some trouble, but at least we brought it. And the issue of the length of time one has to file with Construction Contractors Board was discussed at the Legislative Task Force on Construction Claims. At least it was discussed during the interim. And the issue of expanding the length of time to file with the CCB was not part of the recommendations. But addressing those notices and giving more sting to failing to provide those notices did make it into some of the task force bills that are before Representative Iglesias' committee, the Consumer Protection Committee here over at the House. With regard to the targets, of course, these are performance measure targets, not the agency's targets. Our targets are obviously 100%. We would love to be able to reach that, and we will reach that someday, God willing. But with the performance measures, we've got to make some realistic targets that with the resources that we have, that you authorize, we believe we can meet. And we have, despite some of our best efforts, we've not been able to get up to the 60%. That's the reason it's there, is so that it's attainable, something that we can get. If we can get the packages that we've asked for, we believe we can reach those 60%, and I believe it's a bit of a snowball. Once you reach a certain market share, just like any kind of advertising, once you reach a certain market share, it's self-reinforcing. People talk about it. Whether it's Coca-Cola or it's the Construction Contractors Board, if people have it in the back of their minds, they know what to do when they have a problem. And so I agree with you. The targets should be higher. I fear, frankly, however, if we were to try to put down a 95% target at this time for this performance measure, that we would, with the resources even in these packages, I'm not sure we could reach that even in 5 years.
Mr. Smith, excuse me for interrupting in your question here, but I make an observation as I look at the budget that you've got a substantial cash carry forward, ending fund balance, I think is the terminology. It's substantial to the point that the chair was entertaining thoughts about a fee reduction to reduce that to a point that maybe didn't frighten him quite so much. We've talked about this previously in the committee. One of the things that I'm concerned about with all of the agencies like this that come forward is that if and when we hit tough times, like we did in 01, and you got too big a cash on hand or carried forward, the legislature has the ability to reach in there and pull that money out and use it to transfer it over to the general fund, which we did with a few agencies in the 01 period. And I realize that the contractors or whoever is paying these fees get upset when that happens. So I was looking at this huge pot of money. And the first thing I was wondering is, how do I get a little of it over into Representative Galizio's general fund for education? Or the other thought was, how do I prevent it from, during a downfall, getting over to general fund money? So I'm in following up on where Senator Bates is at with this, I think, Senator, we need to explore a little bit with the department here what we may need to do to try to get this more at a realistic point. And my dear, my apologies to the legislative fiscal officer who is helping us to, you know, this may make more work for her. But we'll apologize for that before we do that rather than waiting to do it afterwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could I just have a follow-up for a moment?
Sure.
If you believe your mission statement, which I believe you do, the mission of the Construction Contracts Board is to protect the public's interest relating to improvements to real property, I would offer you're not doing that, and that what you replied to me just now tells me you're not doing that. And if you need more tools to do that, I'm glad to vote them for you. I'll help you any way I can. I'm not coming after you here. I'm just saying you've got a mission statement. I don't believe you're even close to getting it done. And you're not going to get there until you make some big changes. You've got to get the public involved, let them know you exist. You have to have a way of the public getting to your board in a reasonable length of time. You build a new house, you got a problem, you know, it's 3 or 4 months after you move into it. You talk to your contractor for 7 or 8, 9 months, and you finally get around to going to the CCB, and you're out the window, and you guys are not involved anymore. You've got some real issues here, whether you like to admit it or not. And I'm willing to give you those tools to work with them. You know, I appreciate the good chair's comments on this, and I would be willing to work with him on it or LFO. I'm kind of buried with another issue this session in health care. But frankly, I just don't see you getting your job done. And right now, I'm a no on this budget. But Mr. Chair, I can be moved very quickly into a yes if we just have some roadmap for the future and how we're going to change how you function. Because I really think you want to go there. I don't think you're really opposed to it. You just have to have the tools. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I realize we're a budget committee and not a policy committee, but I always think that if we are thinking about really reducing the fees that these people pay, that we should be getting some type of a policy concession from them at the same time to maybe address some of the issues that have been brought up, that these bills haven't gone anywhere. So,
thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
I have a
question. Your comment made me go look at the other notebook here. And it looks like they're on a percentage basis that their ending balance is, you know, somewhere in the neighborhood of about 35% to 40%. What I'm wondering is there a problem? I know we've never done this before, but just because we've never done it before doesn't mean we can't. Is there a problem with putting a line item in as a reserve that is monies that is intended to be used when the economy tanks and they're still needing the resources to do their job, which I recommend 5% to 10%, and then taking the rest of that and having that as an ending balance that then can be used for other things that the immediate needs that the agency may have, or being able to reduce that ending balance to fund some of these packages that we're talking about. I suppose that's probably not making sense. But
yeah, it does, and I'm going to guess, and some staff can help me on this, but I'm going to guess that this is a winds up now being a policy issue that needs to go to a policy committee before we can do that. But help me if you would, please, Deborah.
You betcha, Mr. Chair, Representative Carmel. I think that in looking at the agency's ending balance, the things that you identified would be exactly the kinds of things that you would take into consideration in evaluating whether the ending balance was too large or too small. I don't necessarily think you'd need a line item to earmark it, but in terms of looking at an ending balance, and you hit on those things. I actually have a revised ending balance projection. It's still, as the chair said, relatively large. One of the things that the agency hasn't been able to get to yet in their presentation is all the substantive legislation that's out there this session that may impact how they do business. And so in some ways, we need a little bit of time to see that these things, as these things work their way through the system, to determine whether or not that's an adequate ending balance or too high of an ending balance. There was one other issue that I wanted to mention with respect to the ending balance, and now it escapes me. I don't know if that gets you closer to a response to your question or not. I could try again, though.
Well, Mr. Chair, a reserve fund and an ending balance fund are two different things. And we've never recognized that in the legislative process since I've been here. A reserve fund is a fund that is held in reserve that is utilized for either things that the agency will need in the future that they're basically saving for, mm-hmm. new truck, I don't know, new camera, whatever. Or are funds that are there to be used when their revenues come in shorter than what they would anticipate or need to be able to continue with their program. An ending balance is an amount of money that's going to be carried. Now, and maybe I'm all wet on this. I don't know. But an ending balance is an amount that they don't have limit. They don't have an authorization to spend it, so it's going to sit there and it's going to carry into their next fiscal year or their next biennium to be utilized at some point in the future. So there's a difference in how the two different funds are used. I mean, this is one of the things, quite frankly, in my estimation, in 2001-03 got us in a boatload of trouble was because of the fact that our agencies weren't authorized to have reserve funds versus ending balance funds.
Mr. Chair, Representative Crummell, and maybe it's that my previous experience at ODOT maybe is coloring my vision of an ending balance. And for me, they're exactly the same thing that you described as a reserve, that an agency needs to look out and see what obligations are going to be down the road and plan for that. But to the extent that the committee would want to build in an expenditure limitation to spend the reserve should they need it, that's certainly something that you can do. But recognize that if they don't spend that, it will have the same effect as the ending balance. It will flow through to the next time period because the dollars are dedicated to this particular agency. So, again, you have a couple of choices, but again, for me, they're actually the same thing. The ending balance and the reserve, that's what it functions as. Again, I could be all wet as well, but it wouldn't be the first time. So, but again, I think that's part of the reason why you might see them having a higher ending balance than maybe you're used to the general rule, I think, that BAM uses of 3 months. That, in my experience with these licensing agencies, and I have 20 of them, it depends on their licensing schedule. It depends on a lot of things to determine what is an adequate ending balance. Is it 3 months? Is it 6 months? Is it 9 months? It's also one of the things I think that the revenue came in this time period a lot higher than they expected it. And I think you've all made the point, is that going to continue? Who knows? So, again, I can see that I'm babbling now, so Mr. Chair, I'll stop talking. I've reached that point.
Okay. I think we've got a lot of food for thought here as we proceed through this budget, and I would respectfully observe that neither my distinguished colleague nor my staff in the LFO office in this particular budget have a history of being all wet, as far as I'm concerned.
kind of
damp, okay.
but Mr. Chair, could I am a, if if you all wanted to do something different with this budget, it's slated to be worked tomorrow morning. And so I guess I'm starting to get a little concerned about, one, as we manage the rest of the time for today, and then whether or not we work it tomorrow.
Memory has it that I was told this was your last budget, so...
Yes, sir, it is.
And we've got several open dates, if I recall looking at the calendar correctly.
Excellent.
So, and we enjoy having you with us. So we won't worry about what our concluding dates are.
All right. Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. Let's proceed with the...
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I just had one further follow-up on that line of questioning.
Yes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Smith, so it is your testimony that the legal counsel has advised you that a private contractor cannot converse with, make plans with, or accept advice from your government agency without becoming a legal employee of that agency.
Chair Jensen and Senator Whitsitt, no, that's not my testimony. My testimony is that if the agency engages in training the independent contractor, that's inappropriate and should not be done. It's also my testimony that given the business needs of the agency, the types of investigations that we need, the specialization, the kind of work out there in the field involving CCB licensing, plumbing, workers' comp, and the whole nine yards, that finding somebody with those kind of skills out in the open market, it would be very, very difficult. Further, using that person to do the police powers of the state, the administrative law issues, complicate finding a good vendor. And it's my testimony that after talking with counsel, that it's not wise to contract out this service.
Thank you.
Okay. I am in the presentation. I am at the part of the presentation where we're through the packages. I would mention that regarding Senator Bates's point that perhaps we should put more into consumer protection and consumer information. That is package number 102. And one thought that you...
What page are you on?
I am getting ready to talk about the legislative issues, and that is on page number 58. The package that I wanted to be sure you were aware of concerning education, consumer education, is on page number 44. That is a fairly modest policy package. If it's your determination that you'd like to see this agency invest or spend more in talking with the consumers to try to get our visibility up, make sure the consumers know about their rights and responsibilities, we would cherish that consideration. We frankly thought we were reaching with this. And if you were of a mind to double it or triple it, considering the ending balance that we currently have and the fact that we don't need a fee increase given the amount of folks that are out there paying the freight right now, I think that would be a wise investment, and it'd be worth your consideration.
Excuse me again. What page were you on?
That's page 44.
44. Oh, very good.
Okay. Package number 102. The current governor's budget is about $285,000. If you wanted to increase, that would be the place to go. If there's no further questions on that package, then
I do have a question,
yeah,
Mr. Chair. I'm sitting here kind of trying to decide whether it's related or not, so we'll just go with it. Talking about the education of the, and I heard the, and I may have missed this yesterday being in and out and everything, but I heard the exchange here with Senator Whitsitt. In the education of the public, and I certainly understand that and appreciate that, and making sure that the public knows what their rights and responsibilities are, but I think the other side to that is the responsibilities side. I have some contractors in my district that quite frankly think that the name of the contractors board, construction contractors board, should be Screw the Construction Contractors Agency, because they, and as you mentioned yesterday in your testimony, when there's a dispute, there's obviously going to be a winner and a loser. But some of the contractors are feeling like, you know, they've got zero protection. They're required to, you know, pay the fees and go through the process, and they go out and do the best job they can. They get a complaint, or you get a complaint that may or may not be founded, and all of a sudden the contractor is guilty, you know, as charged, period, irrespective of how the facts in the case really come out. And when there's been a contractor that has bent over backwards to try to do everything they can for the client, and the client is still not happy, but yet the contractor is the one that ends up getting shafted in the deal, or feeling like they're shafted in the deal. What kind of education process is out there for the contractor so that they understand the consumer's rights and responsibilities, but so that they also understand their own rights and responsibilities in terms of that total interaction?
And Chair Jensen and Representative Crummell, what a wonderful question. It talks about what are we doing to making sure that the other half of the equation, the contractors, have the tools that they need so that commerce happens and we don't end up litigating everything. I think the answer has to do with the contractor education program. Approximately one-third of all contractors now have taken the test and the CCB education that hopefully makes them a better business person. But that's probably should be just the beginning. There is legislation today brought to you by the task force, sponsored by the staff there and of course, the industry, that would require continuing education for all construction contractors, not just building envelope contractors. That continuing education would be in business practices as well as building codes and other issues, and could be geared towards trying to give that contractor those tools, because, you know, I think you're absolutely right. There's contractors out there that sometimes are unfairly targeted by, frankly, their customer. And in some cases, the customer's not always right. And they come to government, whether it's the court system or CCB, and it appears to be a black mark on the contractor's record. What we have to do in those cases is we have to give that contractor due process. We have to do it fast. We have to do it fair. It's one of the reasons why we have that performance measure that we ask of every party in our dispute resolution program. Just tell us, are we fair? Are we fair to both sides, or are we not? And that's how we measure the performance of that program. So the short answer is we need to educate contractors. We're doing it on the front end. We need to have a continuing education program, and that's in legislation right now in Consumer Protection Subcommittee.
Thank you.
That, I think, is another good lead-in to talk about the agency's. This really is a banner year as far as policy issues go. Probably no time in history since the Builders Board was created do we have more policy recommendations that will change the way contractors are regulated than this year. Tremendous amount of policy packages, or I should say policy legislation. A short list of those is contained beginning on page 58. They include things like banning, the possibility of banning synthetic stucco.
Why, Mr. Chair, why is that?
That's the same problem.
Thank you. Why are we looking at banning synthetic stucco?
Chair Jensen and Representative Crummell, it's not a CCB issue, not a CCB bill. I can tell you that this was a bill that was gut and stuffed by the staff working the task force on construction claims. There was discussion in that task force regarding problems with artificial stucco, and this bill was created just a few, really, weeks ago, and is before that Consumer Protection Committee. And I think to answer the question, it's because sometimes this stuff's very tough to install right, and it's caused a lot of problems in the state. And some people believe that it ought to be banned. Now, with that said, there's a lot of people that are on the other side of that equation. A lot of people believe it can be installed correctly if contractors use qualified installers.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a jurisdictional question to you.
Yes.
I'm on the Consumer Protection Committee and are fairly familiar with these policy issues. My question is, as the Ways and Means Subcommittee, General Government, is it our jurisdiction to go over these policy bills and talk about the substance of them? Is that what we should be doing?
Not particularly, I don't think.
All right.
I think that where we identify some issues of concern in the budget we're talking about, and if there are policy bills out there, we certainly need to be aware of what those policy bills are. The Consumer Protection Committee is the one that has the responsibility to look at the policy issue, the policy side. Of that.
And Chair Jensen and Representative Blasio, my purpose, of course, is just to let you know from a budget standpoint this stuff is coming down the road and there may be an impact.
Follow up.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to do a critique. I've never sat on this committee and it's it's a difficult, how do you draw a line, you know? I mean, obviously it's not a clear line drawing exercise. So I'm just, you know, how do we do this?
What can and can't? Yeah. Certainly, these policy bills and LFO has got to be tracking on a lot of that to let us keep us informed as to whether or not the budget that we're dealing with is going to be impacted adversely or otherwise by the policy bills. Just come down. Am I correct on your job description?
You are correct, Mr.
Mr. Chair, maybe my question regarding that one particular bill was inappropriate for this committee.
No, I don't think any question is inappropriate. I mean, as an old, with a bunch of teachers or instructors here, all know that no question is a dumb question or an inappropriate question. It's potentially very enlightening to get the answer to it. So,
yes, thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I'm just bitter because now we're having meetings at night in that Consumer Protection Committee.
And
we're going to do these again.
I
love Mr. Smith. I mean, I know him very well at this point. I'm having deja vu.
I'm also bitter about having meetings at night, in another committee.
It's that time of the season to get cranky.
No, it's much too early in the season. We don't do this until July. We follow a format. We're taking a lot of your time. Please proceed.
Chair Jensen, members of the committee, I think that perhaps I could just draw your attention to the vast array of policy legislation that is making its way through the system. It's on those pages at page 58 through 62. Without taking any more of your time, I think at this point I would conclude my testimony and be here for your questions.
If I go back to these, it seems to me we had some discussion about insurance, if I'm recalling our previous meeting here, and I don't quickly see it in here as one of the policy bills, but I think I saw a bill coming out potentially to the floor, having to do with insurance for contractors, type of thing. Am I wrong on that?
Chair Jensen and the members of the committee, on page number 59, in the middle of the page, you'll see House Bill 2654.
Okay. Okay.
And then the other task force bills, 2656 and 2657, are designed, in my opinion, to try to do things to stop construction defects. And if construction defects are lessened, the theory goes that insurance rates will come down.
I assume that's what you're insuring against, you know, on that. For your agency, without getting into the pros and cons of the particular bills out there, can you refresh my memory on what you were talking about yesterday on the this issue of insurance and the relevance of it in your discussion?
Chair Jensen and members of the committee, as I recall, there was some discussion about how the agency has brought to the assembly over the last several years, a couple of bienniums, the fact that construction contractors have complained about the state-mandated liability insurance that's required in order to have a CCB license. Oregon is somewhat unique in its requirement to have this insurance. The state of California, for example, doesn't have it. And there's a lot of construction that goes on down there, of course. Many, many states don't have it. And Oregon has chosen to have it. I don't think there's any interest at this point in either the industry leaders or with consumer groups to lessen the insurance requirement. But it is a barrier to entry in some cases. The cost has gone up. And my testimony yesterday was that the problem, I believe, because I pay attention to our surveys regarding this issue, I think it's lessened a little bit. I think that I don't have as many contractors calling me on the phone saying, what are you doing about this problem, Greg? I can't stay in Oregon if you maintain this liability mandate. It is a policy issue. It's something that this body has required ever since 1972 of construction contractors. And the Task Force on Construction Claims, that was one of their mandates, was to take a look at that. And their ultimate decision was that they would not recommend doing away with that requirement, but instead would, frankly, require a little bit different type of coverage, and that's contained in House Bill 2654.
Can I follow up with another question then on that? In your experience, do all of the licensed contractors carry insurance, and is that a part of the conditions of contest?
Yeah.
And what about the unlicensed?
Yeah. Great question, Senator Jensen, Chair Jensen. In order to maintain a license with the Construction Contractors Board, one has to demonstrate proof of this liability insurance coverage. So all licensed contractors have the insurance. Non-licensed contractors, I'd be surprised if any of them have it. Obviously, they're operating illegally. That's one of the great costs to licensure, is that insurance coverage.
There's nothing that would prohibit a non-licensed contractor from having insurance, to the best of your knowledge.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. I would not expect, if it's a fairly heavy premium, that a non-licensed contractor would voluntarily go out and, you know, spend that money on the premium. But I just was wondering if there was any way to kind of further control those who license and who do not license through this medium. I guess that's policy questions I won't ask. Representative Galizio.
I didn't really have a question right now, but I did want to say though that there are a lot of the issues that the task force is tackling. I mean, it's very impressive, and there's
course, you can't find complete agreement, but to the extent that the task force is doing a lot of great work and really detailed, it's been really impressive. So I certainly wanted to commend the agency. I mean, I missed what the precursor to what Senator Bates was saying. I don't know, but on the in terms of the task force and reaching out to some of the folks who actually are in this room, I think it's been really impressive. But just an editorial comment.
Yeah. Representative Crummell, I've got a question, but I'll come back to you.
Well, I was just wondering as we're talking about this insurance question, and this may be more policy than budget, but I'm wondering because it potentially could have an effect on the agency, especially with disputes and that sort of thing, and that is the requirement, because a few years ago, if I'm not mistaken, we were really being asked by the construction industry to do something because the premiums had gotten, and I believe it was the liability insurance, that the premiums had gotten so far out of sight that many of them were just flat out saying, you know, they weren't sure they were going to be able to stay here. Yeah. And the sort of the effect of that would potentially be backlogs in people trying to build whatever they're wanting to build. And so has that kind of settled? Because I haven't heard as many complaints this time around. So has that kind of settled down? And I'm wondering, is it, if we're the only state on the West Coast, for example, that requires that liability insurance, is it the insurance company sort of feeling like, hey, they've got a captive audience, they've got a market here that they can do anything they want to with, and so they jack up the rates irrespective of what their actual experience is?
Chair Jensen.
Yeah, question for the regulating insurance, but go ahead.
Chair Jensen and Representative Crummell, I think that first, state of Washington does have an insurance requirement. I believe it's, that last time I looked, it was half of what Oregon requires. Why does Oregon do it? Well, I think leaders in the industry, you know, we do a lot of things different in Oregon. I think that leaders in the industry want it. I don't think it's necessarily consumer driven. I think it's driven by responsible leaders in the construction industry. And then to your question of, well, has it gotten better? Again, this is my testimony, maybe slightly. I think it's still a concern. I can tell you, however, that every single month we license 500 new contractors that somehow find this insurance at higher cost than what it was 10 years ago, but they find it somehow. And I don't think it's a barrier to entry. I think that particularly with some of the fine work the task force has done, that it should get even better.
I don't know. I'm not an insurance agent, and I don't want to get out in the world that I'm very knowledgeable on. But my experience is that liability insurance, period, has gone up, and up. And, in fact, in a number of cases, a number of companies have gotten out of the liability insurance, you know, or it's impossible to get liability insurance. And just for your information, if you're looking for extra liability insurance, as a legislator, you are at very high risk. And some companies won't cover you.
That's comforting, you know.
Well, I thought it might be. As a legislator, for liability insurance, you are high risk.
So Dr. Bates has a double whammy.
I got double whammy.
That's why he is so fond of insurance companies. I mean, and I know because when I was elected, I wanted to increase some liability insurance, sort of thing, and my agent laughed at me. I'm not sure, therefore, whether the rising cost
in this has as much to do with the industry as it does just the general trend in a liability insurance. Well, that's an entirely different topic and discussion, and not one relevant for us here. So we'll move on. I want to go back to Senator Bates's issues or concerns, and I want to ask what portion of the budget is this in? Help me with understanding. I've been flipping through it here, and I'm not finding what I wanted. So
I think one of them is.
The education piece, yeah, I find that.
Okay.
But I'm looking for how you catch these rascals.
I don't believe that's necessarily in the budget. I couldn't find it. I knew that from outside information.
Well, yeah, but...
I don't think it's in the documentation here, is it, Mr. Chair, if I may ask?
Chair Jensen and Senator Bates, is the question, do we keep track of how many complaints we get that are outside jurisdiction because of the length of time?
Mr. Chair, I think we're talking about time of discovery.
Well, yeah.
Chair Jensen, we do keep records regarding whether or not a filing of a complaint is outside the agency's jurisdiction. And I might be able to get those numbers to you. If it's in excess of the 1 year filing period, I might not. I'm not certain that we do it that fine, because outside of the agency's jurisdiction has three components. One is that length of time. The other is whether it's in Oregon. The other is whether it's construction work. So, but we could probably get a pretty good estimate for you. Can I provide that to you?
Okay.
Okay.
Good. Any other questions? Kind of rambled a little bit here this morning. Senator Johnson hasn't made it. Did you cover the material that you brought in for that? I said we'd hold on for 30 minutes.
It's
a little past 30 minutes. So.
Okay. Chair Jensen, I believe I did. It's the handout here that is loose leaf. Again, what it has to do with is the prayer on the part of the agency to get additional resources to stop unlicensed activity out in the field, and would not require a fee increase, would require authorization of 7.5 FTE, and we believe that's a minimum. In the past, we've had 18 contracts. We would not be able to do exactly the same thing as we did with those contracts, but we believe we would be able to at least address the problem with this policy package.
Okay. Other questions?
I have a question just off the wall, but if you don't mind. I've noticed in residential building in the Salem area, homes are going up in very foul weather. The frames and the sheetings and so forth are absolutely drenched, and we observe moisture barriers being put on and siding being put on when the dwellings haven't had time to dry out. I would wonder, do you regulate that sort of thing?
Mr. Chair and Senator Whitson, Construction Contractors Board doesn't directly relate or doesn't directly regulate that. That would be a building codes issue. I can tell you that that was the topic of a lot of discussion at the task force on construction claims. There is a 19% survive 19% moisture content requirement, so that a builder would not be able to enclose the interior of the structure until the relative moisture content in the wood had been reduced to, I believe, 19%. So that is a new requirement to address that issue of how do you make sure that you don't have mold and other moisture-related problems in construction work in Oregon. I mean, it rains here, and we can't just not do construction work in the rain, but at the very least, we should be drying out these structures before we close them up. And the task force recommendation does contain a bill on that.
Follow up. How do you determine the moisture content after it's been constructed?
Mr. Chair and Senator Whitson, quite frankly, I've never done it. But I believe that you use a moisture meter. I think it has two probes. You stick it into the wood, and there's a meter, or a reading that comes out. And Mr. Berry talked about that issue a little bit more than I could.
Thank you.
Okay. We have some folks here. All right. We will conclude with the agency here. We have some folks that have signed up for public testimony. We start out with Ralph Gunner with the AFSCME, and Mr. Kofori with the Remodelers Association, and Scott Berry with the Oregon Home Builders. And you're first on the list. Go ahead, Ralph.
That's a first. Thank you, Mr. Chair, very much. I've enjoyed this discussion. For the record, my name is Ralph Groner, representing American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I'd just like to make mine rather short, other than that I have such deep, wonderful feelings that the legislature finally created a Consumer Protection Committee. I actually wish, rather than the master's I received, I have a new thesis that I'm trying to get students interested into, and that is where we have regulatory agencies, since my union represents all of those in the state, from building codes to real estate to CCB to DEQ, I have faced problems through the last 20 years relative to the dichotomy between paid by the industry as compared to whether or not my members possibly have been co-opted because of that system. Need that to say, I care very much about the honest contractors. I started out some 30 years ago with a bad experience. I bought my first really, I thought, nice home at 55 Thou. I remodeled it. I was dumb. I didn't even know what a CCB was. I paid $100,000 to knock out the roof and big windows out over the forest, Willamette River, and it ended up I was a victim of lack of envelope construction, no inspector. They're now my members, City of Oregon City. I didn't know. They didn't inspect for water damage coming through. And now you see a lot of bills coming in front of your committee that deal with what I went through. That basically broke me financially. I ended up, the insurance wouldn't cover it because they said they weren't notified in time, so I had to pay that loan off and then borrow another. It ended up $150,000 to do the same thing. But I've paid it all off. I'm older. I'll just work till I'm closer to your age, Mr. Chair.
Well, you got a long ways to go, Ralph.
Thank you. I do represent Construction Contractors Board, and I do want to comment that the Oregonian series that was in the about a year ago, 3, 4, 5 part on this issue, makes you and your committee you serve on policy-wise to my union in terms of consumer protection. You're probably the most important committee in the building, and I really hope you understand that. I think you may have sat back without realizing you're on the ice tip of an iceberg, and the fact is that thousands of people from the California studies to Oregon have, in fact, had major problems. I'm one of them. CCB was created to help resolve those problems. And now that I know, when I remodel, which I am, I want to know I have a licensed contractor. Of course, mine shows me my contract, goes through my contract, goes through his insurance, goes through everything, because he knows I work on this stuff, but I don't know that everyone would know that. I only want to say, when it comes to my investigatory agencies, Betsy Johnson listened. There's no different in this agency. I'm commenting now on investigators. In real estate, she worked very hard to make sure my 19 investigators remained state employees rather than employees of the board, which is the industry that's being investigated. Similarly, I could say this in BCD and all of my agencies, I really would hope you understand, and I believe you do, the significant importance of, one, investigators should be state employees, because they are looking at worse problems, I think, than have been presented to you, but they have been presented to Representative Galizio. And I sat in many of the interim committee task force hearings, and you haven't been privy, I don't believe, to the testimony of the public about what happened to them, but the Oregonian did print front page, middle page, ongoing page after page on this, and I thought, by the way, for the most part, it was a very, very wonderful series, and I hope they'll follow up on what you do to resolve that problem, and which that task force was really a result of that, and you're part of it with the budget right in front of you. So the policy you face for a budget committee is, shall the investigators continue to be privatized, or should they be state employees? The fact is, although I'm a union, and you can look me in the eye and say, Ralph, you've got a conflict of interest, I will tell you that I hope you can bypass that. I've been around this a long time, and I wish I were back in college so I could write a doctorate on this issue. The fact of the matter is, you need investigative agencies to have state employees do that work. That shouldn't be in the hands of the private sector.
Well, could I just to suggest to you that if you have this burning desire to write a dissertation on this particular...
Don't do it here in front of you, yes.
That would be the first suggestion.
Yes.
The second suggestion that I would offer to you is that it is never too late to go back to school. So the only thing you have to be willing to do if you want to go back and be a student, is take vows of poverty.
That's correct. Mr. Yerden.
So and that will get you to that dissertation.
Mr. Chair, the way they have cut the community college and higher ed budget, I'm not sure I can afford the tuition. No, excuse me. I will conclude with that. I'll say that Craig Smith, by the way, is highly respected by our staff, really is truly liked by the staff. I asked one time of our staff, what is the problem in the Portland Metro? Why can't we get to all these people in time? So I looked at the wall, and you should visit CCB. I would hope you would. Meet the staff. Say hello to them. What do you do? Do that. Take the time. And we had several investigators for over 1 million people, and I realized right there that there was a lack of staffing, and so that's a big issue to us. That's all I have to say. I have taken too much of your time. I appreciate your handling this very, very serious issue, and I wish you well, and our union, Ask Me, is there to help you in any way we can.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Mr. Kavori.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Kavori. I'm representing the Oregon Remodelers Association. The Oregon Remodelers Association was instrumental in the establishment of the Construction Contractors Board. We feel that consumer protection is not something that is a problem for us. Consumer protection is an advantage to us, and that is because our membership are the good guys. We're the people who obey the laws, who get our licenses, who buy our insurance, who pay our workers' compensation, who do our taxes. And we are out there competing in the field every day with people who are not licensed, who don't pay their taxes, who don't have workers' compensation. And those are the people that end up getting stories in the Oregonian, and then we're the ones who bear the brunt of it. So anything this committee can do to make serious consumer protection, we're in favor of. And the major thing that you can do at this point is to make sure that there's enough staff, highly qualified professional staff, doing investigations. Our main complaint from our members is we're out there in the field doing our work, and the guy is competing with us next door, cutting our bids because he doesn't have to pay the fees, he doesn't have to pay workers' compensation insurance, and there's not enough investigators CCB has to go out and make sure those people are not doing it and put them out of business. Just briefly, I'd like to say agree with what Ralph had just told you. We think that Craig Smith is doing an excellent job. We like the agency a lot. We work very closely with him on policy issues all through the year, and we feel when we come to the legislature, we come hand in hand with the industry and the regulating agency.
Thank you. Appreciate your comment, Mr. Kavori. Senator Bates has a question. I think he's...
Before I'll ask you a question, and we'll ask everyone the same question. I'm still very concerned that the policy option packages in this are not adequate for getting a job done. We're worried about public awareness. We're worried about time of discovery. I'm worried about license activity. I'm a dispute resolution. And, you know, as I said earlier, it's the biggest investment the average consumer will make in their entire life. And we've got great builders out there. I've got a lot of friends in building trade. It's a wonderful job. And I know what they're up against with unlicensed people and even some more licensed that just are cutting corners. And I'm concerned the policy option practice of this agency aren't adequate. What's your opinion on that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, we would like to see more money in letting people know. We think that there is a problem with not enough Oregonians being aware of the existence of the CCB or the details of how it works. So if you would help that package and give the CCB more tools, that would be very helpful. We do what we can. You know, there are trade shows around the Home Show and the Home and Garden Show that we are a part of and actually put on in the metropolitan area. And at all those shows, we have booths, and CCB has a booth, and we give out as much information as we can. We're also very supportive of the law, that the bill that's coming this session in front of Representative Blizio's committee, that will put more teeth in the enforcement of getting consumer notification. And the consumer notification comes at the time when that relationship is first established with the contractor and the homeowner. And if the person understands at that time, they get the piece of paper that says you've got a year to file a claim, then we think at that point it's responsibility of the homeowner. We can't hold hands all the way through the process. All we can do is give them the information. And we think once they have the information, they ought to be aware that within a year they have to file a complaint. So I think that we're doing our part. We think that would be doing their part. But whatever you could do to help the agency, Senator Bates, we'd be in favor of.
Follow, Mr. Chair.
Follow.
The question, Mr. Kapoor, was, are these packages adequate? Tougher question.
Senator Bates, Representative Jensen, Senator Bates, nothing is ever adequate in this session. I've never heard anybody say, yes, we've got all the money we need. Thank you very much.
Good answer. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Scott.
Good morning. Scott Berry on behalf of the Oregon Home Builders Association, and I'll just, I think, reiterate some of the comments that Mr. Kafouri made. The Oregon Home Builders Association brought forward House Bill 2078 last session that created the task force that has led to the number of bills that some of which you'll see here in the Ways and Means Committee, but also a number of other bills that will just be going through the policy committees. And I think the importance there is our industry was taking a look at this problem both from an insurance point of view and from a construction point of view and saying, yes, our insurance rates are going up. The exclusions in those policies are going up as well, meaning we're getting less coverage for more money, which troubled us. And in addition to that, we wanted to look at the construction side, the technical piece of how a house is built, and try to get to how can we build that house better. I think that's led to the envelope certification process in 2656, which just passed last night and is headed down, I believe, this way, and a number of other bills. There's continuing education on top of that certification, so the folks dealing with the envelope, where 90% of the problems occur, will have a special certification. All contractors will have to go through a continuing education process to be up to date with codes and business practices like lean law, that sort of thing. Is the package enough? I can tell you if the bills go through, which I believe they will, we're certainly in favor of them, we will have more consumer protection in Oregon than any other state that we've been able to locate. And when I say we, that includes the task force and the agencies as we look around the nation and try to find examples of other states that are doing work on consumer protection and also on building codes. So I think we are doing as much as we can. I will also say that there is still another opportunity out there for consumer notification. We have looked at what we might be able to do if the Construction Contractors Board were able to keep their civil penalty money. And today that civil penalty money flows into the general fund. If you look at Building Codes Division budget, their civil penalty money stays with the Building Codes Division and is used for numerous things, which we also support. The civil penalty money, again, this is money, citations against contractors for doing something they should not have done. That civil penalty money now goes to the general fund. We love to see that come back to the CCB and go out for consumer notification so that consumers are more aware of what occurs and what needs to happen every time they hire a contractor, remodeler, home builder, etc. Again, it's not a huge amount of money. I don't know that it would be severely noticed in the budget, but we would love to have that money back in the contractors board budget for that consumer notification process. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
One question, Mr. Chair. What is a building envelope certification? I don't understand what a building envelope is.
The building envelope, Chair Jensen, Representative Crummell, is the outside of the building, sort of the shell, roofing, siding, windows and doors. If there's any other masonry products on the outside, all the way through to the inside interior walls. And Senator Wichert asked a question about the drying procedure earlier, and that drying procedure would require, again, for wood construction, that the envelope wood is at 19% or below in moisture. That's a national standard, not something we came up with here in Oregon, to ensure that the house, once enclosed, falls below a moisture level that would encourage mold and other things to occur. So.
Other question?
He answered before I could ask it.
Oh, darn.
Just one other comment, if I could. I think one other piece we're very supportive of in this budget, and that's the ability for the Contractors Board to start really aggressively going after the unlicensed contractor folks where they really haven't had the authority to do that before. So I think that will be extremely effective in helping us curtail some of this unlicensed activity. Prior to that, the CCB was not able to go after contractors because they didn't have a license, and that was out of their purview. They were just simply operating illegally. So I think that'll benefit all of us.
Thank you. We are going to not reschedule the meeting for tomorrow, but watch your email as we discuss this with the LFO. If we have other work to do before we get ready to do a work session. And I do have another work session scheduled for tomorrow, isn't there?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there's a bill, and I apologize, I can't remember what it is. Michelle needs to bring a bill in.
Yeah. Work. So we will have the meeting, though we may not do the work session on this tomorrow, depending on what our conversations are. If you all have any input that you want to make on that, I certainly will entertain that as we proceed through. Okay, with that, we're adjourned.